Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, What is Your Salary Expectation? Part 1 of 1.
The questions this cast answers are, how do I answer questions about my salary? We get this question a lot, folks. What salary should I expect? And how do I find out what a reasonable salary actually is?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Are you looking to be a standout when it comes time for promotions? Our Effective Communicator Conference will give you the practical tools you need to stand out. Improve your communication, reliability, and influence. Skills managers all look for when they choose who moves up next. Don't wait for your opportunity. Prepare for it now. Register at manager-tools.com/ECC. So Mark, today we are recording a Career Tools podcast that was originally released way back in September of 2009.
A good update time. Everyone assumes things have changed a lot. They really haven't.
They really haven't. But going back and freshening up and re-releasing some of these podcasts is a really good idea. Also, there's a lot of people looking for jobs right now, which means this is a really timely occasion to release some of this content. And folks, this is a one of a series of podcasts that we're putting out about how to interface, engage better with recruiters, talent management professionals, individuals that you may be speaking to about an upcoming job.
Could be a manager, could be somebody, you know, no recruiter, no talent manager, just somebody who says, hey, you're somebody I might be interested in. And they're going to end up asking you the four questions.
Some of the standard questions that you ought to be ready to answer, have good answers prepared for. So today we're going to talk about salary expectations. And questions about salary expectations are ones that people hate to answer.
And they're not any good at it either.
And they're not any good at it. Exactly. And I mean, you can hear it in a person's voice. More junior candidates are looking for their first or maybe even second role, and they squirm with embarrassment at naming what they imagine is a horribly high number.
And afraid they're going to get ruled out for that alone.
Exactly. Middle managers name a number and immediately have a caveat, afraid to miss out on an opportunity. And I mean, the same is true of candidates who are out of work and who have gotten themselves to the stage of missing mortgage payments. And then there are always the more senior candidates, and they're the most likely to get it right, naming a number confidently. But again, they put in a caveat without sounding desperate.
Can I just interject here that for those of us Americans listening to you Canadians, you should know that when she says caveat, that means caveat. That's very much like the other Canadian word we talked about recently on a
decal.
Cast. Decal, which is decal in the U.S. I'm sure they're both derived from the French.
Sticker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sorry. Yes. Okay. So again, more senior candidates, they put in a caveat without sounding desperate. And folks, the purpose of this cast is to help you move to the same position of those senior candidates, that is not sounding desperate, without waiting for the years of experience to accrue in order to gain that kind of confidence in an answer.
Yep. All right, so here's our outline. Number one, don't play games, folks. Number two, you should know the appropriate range and we'll help you with that. Number three, state it and still use the caveat.
Exactly. So we're going to start with the don't play games piece. And folks, just to be clear here, we're talking about initial conversations with recruiters or company corporate recruiters, or to Mark's point, a potential future hiring manager, for example. And this is the kind of question you'll often be asked in the first contact that you've had with them. Maybe right after posting your resume on a job board or to an agency website or to a corporate careers site, what have you.
Or over beers, where somebody says, you know, we're looking for guys like you. I'm actually open to opportunities or actually looking right now. And by the way, folks, if you don't know what I mean by opened opportunities, we have our Career Tools Hall of Fame cast called Opened Opportunities. We encourage you to look at it. Most people think of themselves as either being happy or looking. Mm-hmm. And there's a different mindset, which is opened opportunities, where you can be happy and still be opened opportunities. And when you change that mindset, you'll be amazed how many conversations occur where you'll hear what the other person says differently, and you'll realize there may be an opportunity for you there. You're not wanting to leave. You don't need to leave. You're not looking for a job. Maybe you're not even out of a job. You're in a job and you're fine. But being able to realize, hey, there's something in the wind here that says they're open to that, or there may be an opportunity here. You start hearing things differently. You respond differently. And more importantly, you respond better. Now, look, there's a couple of common thought patterns which candidates have that lead them, and that was us years ago as well, to draw the wrong conclusion, and then you end up taking the wrong action. And candidates often act coy in these conversations because they've been told stupidly by all kinds of people on YouTube who are only trying to get you to watch a 10-minute video because they want that third ad in their YouTube video because they don't care about you and they don't know what they're talking about, and all they want to do is get their ads and have you watch. And they're not making money off of you. They're not trying to help you. They're trying to help themselves by making money from YouTube. You've heard over and over again, never name a number first. Well, that's wrong. If you get asked for a number, you have to give it. So, you know, never go first. Candidates believe that this is not a negotiation, but there's nothing to negotiate on yet. So you don't need to worry about that. At this point, we don't even know what jobs are available, let alone what the appropriate rate is for those roles. You don't, probably. Whilst we don't believe salary is ever worth negotiating over, which is an issue for another cast, which we have, this is definitely not the time to be thinking, I'm in negotiation, so I need to state a number that's not based on reality or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or there could be this situation where people are afraid that if they give a number now, they're going to be obliged to stick to that number, regardless of the final role. And again, folks, this is simply not true. This is a very, very surface level beginning conversation. And there's every opportunity. Once you've met the hiring managers, once you've found out about the role, once you've discussed the benefits, and once you've been offered the actual job, to say, well, now that I have all the information, I think my value in this role is X. Or even, this is such a great opportunity to do something really worthwhile. I know my initial number was higher than you wanted to pay, and I'm willing to do the role for $10,000 less. I mean, you could negotiate both directions, frankly.
Yeah. And it's not even negotiation. We tell people all the time, you can't negotiate for salary. A negotiation implies that if I'm negotiating with Sarah right now, I offer her something in return for the additional money. But you can't do that in a job interview. You can't say, well, I'll work longer hours or I won't take any vacation. You're not going to do that. So it's not a negotiation. And it also reminds me of our fundamental principle. Too many people today believe that interviewing is a two-way street, that you're supposed to be interviewing. And of course, at the start of this, you're not in an actual interview where there are structured questions and so on and a specific outcome. But they think that this is a time for me to learn about them. And yes, you could ask some questions that would help you learn. But interviewing is not a two-way street. It's two one-way streets in order. You go and get the offer first. And once you have the offer, control switches to you, and you have a chance then to start asking questions to understand more that you didn't learn in the interview. There's no amount of questions you can ask in an interview to help you feel better about the offer they might make you that will satisfy you if, in fact, you spend so much time asking questions and talking about it being a two-way street that the person you're talking to thinks, this person is too selfish. I didn't get enough time to interview them, let alone tell them the things I wanted to know. And so the default answer in every interview, by definition, is no.
Right. I didn't get enough information. I don't know whether or not I want to hire them.
So don't worry about negotiating until you have an offer. Or they're afraid that if they give a number, they price themselves out of the job. That's the big fear, right?
Mm-hmm. That's the big fear. Yeah.
If you followed our guidance on having at least 6 months worth of cash, and now the world has continued to change in the last 25 years, we would recommend 9 months to a year now. And I know that makes it hard, But believe me, you don't want to be making job decisions when you're down to your last dollars. Now you're desperate. Now you're going to take something maybe you don't like so you can pay your mortgage or pay your rent. And we don't want you in that situation. So if you've saved your money, you're going to feel much more confident and you'll have a longer lead time to consider options. And if this is the only one, you could say, well, I've got 6 more 9 months I can live on. I don't need to take this. I'm not desperate.
Yeah.
If you're in that situation where you're desperate, it's bad for 3 reasons. One, it's bad for your self-esteem, which makes you less effective in interviewing. 2, it looks bad on your resume. And 3, recruiters know you're just accepting because you need a job. And not so much about the money piece, because they probably have a limit, a range they have to fall within, but rather, the moment you get a job that you're not super excited about but pays your bills, you're going to start looking to move on to something else as soon as you can find it. And that makes them less likely to offer you in the first place.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, all that to say, remember, folks, this is a very initial gauge on whether or not we're even in the same ballpark here. That's really all this question is. Prior to any sort of discussion of the role itself, discussion of or around interviewing at all. And we've explained this before, that recruiters work horizontal and vertical desks, and that these are sometimes limited to a certain salary range. So if you're, let's say, a $100,000 candidate, and the desk they work is one that only hires for $50,000 roles, they're not going to be able to help you. So this is just an initial gauge, like, are we even in the same space here? Because if not, maybe we stop the conversation before both of us have our time wasted.
Yeah. They also need to know that you have a realistic view of your market value. Candidates who have unrealistic views of their value are really hard to work with because they have unrealistic expectations about other things too. You might just be arrogant. You might just be unknowledgeable, which they wouldn't want to hire you for that reason, certainly. And recruiters only want to work with candidates who are easy to work with. Since they have the power, even just a hiring manager having beers and talking to you about a new opportunity that you, well, you stumbled into the conversation, they still have the power. They potentially have the job we might want. Our goal is to be easy to work with. So they want to work with us. They want to continue the conversation, perhaps leading to final interviews and a job offer. In this market, with a lot more candidates than jobs, this is an especially important concept to grasp. There are opportunities out there, guys, but we have to position ourselves to take advantage of them. Where the recruiter is the gatekeeper, we need them to want to work with us.
Yeah, that is exactly it. And folks, all that to say, being coy, it doesn't help you and your position here. It annoys the recruiter or the hiring manager, the person to whom you're speaking. And remember, if it's a recruiter specifically, they have like 50 calls to make in the next 2 hours. And annoyed recruiters do not want to help you. Annoyed people who've got a job that maybe they could hire you for don't want to hire you because they don't want to work with you.
Yeah. So it's funny. I had a candidate once say, well, I didn't want to annoy him. I listened to you, so I didn't want to annoy him. So I just told them what I kind of knew, which is not what we had told them in the exact same cast he had listened to, which was, well, I was told I wasn't supposed to give a number first. Okay. If you're wondering whether or not that'll annoy a recruiter, having been a recruiter before, I can tell you it annoyed me. Okay. We expect you to have a little understanding of where the market is. We understand that you don't have it exactly. You certainly don't understand. You don't know what their range is, but don't try to be coy. Don't try to dodge the question. You have to have an answer.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Are you thinking of taking that leap into leadership? The number one comment made at our Effective Manager Conference is that individuals wish they would have learned this when they first became a manager. So get your head start on your next promotion. The Effective Manager Conference will give you the actionable tools you need to lead, and all of our conferences are available in person and virtually. Check it out online today at manager-tools.com/EMC. All right, so another thing that you must do is know the appropriate range. Folks, the first two things we do when we start a job search is update our resume and then do some market research. Before we've even posted our resume or sent it to a recruiter or told other people that we're looking, we need to know what we're looking for and what the salary range for that position is.
Yeah. The secret to answering the other questions in this series, and by the way, here are the four questions. What is your current situation? What are you looking for? What do you want to do? And where do you want to do it? Actually, the what do you want to do and where do you want to do it sometimes comes across as one question. It's my favorite question, but it is a two-parter, so we call it two questions. All of which we have podcasts for, all of which are free. The secret to answer these questions is to be absolutely clear about what your situation was, know what you're looking for, being able to express that in a clear, direct, and quick way. It's not coy. You're not playing games here. You're not trying to win a battle of skirmishing early on to get a point. Because you start getting, if you think you're getting points in the recruiter, they're liking you less and less and less. And this question is no different. You know, what's your salary expectation? And in order to do that, to answer it well, you have to have done some research.
Mm-hmm. And folks, there is more accessible information about pay rates in particular markets on the internet than you could ever need. There's more information about it than you could consume, frankly. So all that to say, there's no excuse for not knowing your market value. And frankly, again, recruiters also know there's tons of stuff online. So if you don't know, that's also going to be another black mark against you in terms of the fact that, hey, you could know this. It's very easy. So we want you to do a little bit of research just to get yourself prepared for these types of questions. And it's easy, folks. Log in to one of the big job boards or job aggregators, search for your desired job title and geographic area, and write down the company, the area they're in, and the salary that's offered. Now, I urge you not to think at this moment, oh, while I'm here, I'll just apply, because you're going to get distracted and you don't even know what to say if somebody calls. So for now, this is just a research exercise. Just write all the information down. You can come back and apply for things later.
Yeah.
You can also try a more niche job board, like one that is in your specific geographical area or your sector, just to try and like make a finer point on your research, if you will. But again, you're just doing research right now and you're writing things down.
Yeah. And if you're in the tech sector, look, Reddit and some of the tech job boards. I mean, it's funny to me that the tech community, which is typically less communicative than on average, it's not a lot, but it's enough. Technical people tend to be less communicative, less open, less facile in terms of their communication. They have outstanding job boards and professional boards where you can go and ask. And you should go and ask, hey, look, here's my last job. Here's who I work for. Here's where I am. What do you guys think I should ask for if I want to go do this, that, or the other thing? You can do that anonymously. And people tell me all the time, you mean there are geographic job boards? Yes, there are. Now, there's not a geographic job board for South Santa Clara, okay? It would be Silicon Valley or it would be Los Angeles. But still, that's a start. Same thing with the sector. For virtually every sector we talk about, there are job boards. And I'm constantly telling people, are you subscribed to an industry journal? Okay. Industry journals are where people in that industry post jobs. And that journal probably has a job board, or they likely have a forum section, and you can go and ask there. Also, look for salary surveys in your industry. Recruitment companies produce these as a service to their clients, but they are freely available on the web, even if you're not going to use a recruiter because you have a good network. Go to the recruiter's websites and do some digging, do the research. They're out there. There's also websites like salary.com or payscale.com. They rely on crowdsourcing to give salary details for roles and geographies. It's quite specific. If you start doing this, you will not only be more accurate, you will be more confident, and you will less likely be coy, and therefore less likely to annoy the person you're talking to.
Mm-hmm. And of course, folks, let's not forget, it would be silly not to consult AI to assist you with some of this research as well. Have a conversation with your favorite little chatbot, and it will tell you more information about salary range for specific jobs in your area. Add all that to your research.
Think about that. This cast came out 15 years ago. AI wasn't a thing. It was, but it wasn't common. Now it's completely common, exactly. Right? Guess what those AI bots have already done? They've already crawled all those websites. They already know it. They already have all that stuff. So you could probably do this entire process and ask it to go to multiple job boards. You could write a detailed, specific prompt and tell it not to lie and not to hallucinate. And you can get some really good ranges. And using these online sources, you should be able to very quickly gain an understanding of the market value of a particular job title in your geography. Not all job titles are equal, but you will be narrowing your range. And again, you'll be building more confidence. Make sure you have a range which covers all of them.
Yeah. Okay. So that takes us then to just state it. Now, this is both the easiest and hardest part simultaneously of this podcast. All you need to do when you're asked for your salary range is state a number. But we've heard candidates sound embarrassed or unsure or brazen or even confrontational when they say their number. And folks, it's a number. It's your value in the marketplace. You know it is. You did your research, a la our previous point in this podcast. And if you're right, which you will be because all of the information is at your fingertips on the internet, the recruiter is not going to be surprised if you say a reasonable number that is common in the market and in your geographical area. And also, simultaneously, the recruiter is going to be quietly relieved that you're a realistic, serious candidate because you say a number that's within that range for that geographical area. I mean, yes, they're going to be happy that they're talking to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
If you're uncertain about this, practice saying it. I got to tell you, I just got done coaching some executives on presenting. I was at a management meeting for a company, the very top level managers, and the presenting wasn't that great. And so I spent a lot of time coaching the executives who are clients about how they can present. And I told all of them, you have to rehearse. You only do this four times a year. It was a quarterly management meeting, the big meeting the company has every year, right? Rehearse. And one of them had rehearsed, and he was clearly the best of everyone. He did a great job. Mark Gravel did a wonderful job. And here's what I want you to practice. I want you to record yourself saying your number, okay? Then I also want you to throw in a couple of other factual statements you know. For instance, the United States has 50 states. France is the biggest geographic country in Europe. The Sahara Desert is on the continent of Africa. And then my range is 104 to 114. That's the way you say it. Get used to that tonal quality that you have when you say a factual thing. Now, you might say, well, Mark, I'm not sure it is factual. It is. You've done research now, and you have a pretty good handle on it. They might have something different. Look, we've read recently in the last year or so in the Wall Street Journal that people are being offered millions of dollars in salary to leave one AI company and go to another. That's a very frothy job market. The ranges are enormous. When you start talking about a base of a million, you're going to have pretty wide variations and so on. But for the 99.9% of the people, other than at the very, very top, where there's all kinds of other compensation to be considered anyway, we're talking about maybe a range of $10,000 or $15,000, and that's completely fine. Your research will make you as confident as saying the United States has 50 states, or Canada only has one border with any other country, the United States. These are all just facts. Okay, so you just say them, get the fact, say the truth, and then state your truth based on your experience, and that will be enough with the same tone as all those other facts.
That's exactly it. All right, so we've got a few examples. It could sound like, I'm looking at roles in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, or my research shows that the roles I'm moving to in this industry pay around $60,000, or I'm looking for a package of $85,000 to $105,000. And in answering the question, folks, the words are the least important part. I mean, the research and the confidence, the practicing and the looking for information gives you is far more important. The ability to just say it in a non-embarrassed kind of way and answer the question that's been posed to you, which is looking for a number, that is the important part.
Yeah. Now, we're still going to use the caveat. Oh, I'm sorry, caveat. As with the what you want to do question and the location preference, state that you would consider exceptional opportunities which didn't fall in that range or that had other benefits. I know of two people in the last couple of years who took no salary. They're toward the end of their career and they said, no, you don't need to pay me. I just want options because they were in a job as executive vice president where there was more options. And one person said, the recruiter kind of raised their eyebrows. He says, no, I'm not worried about that. I'm fine. I can retire right now, so I'm not looking for a salary. What I'm looking for is an opportunity, and if I deliver a high-level opportunity, that will affect the value of my stock, my shares, and that will be a bigger payoff for me at no risk to the company, obviously. Mm-hmm. Right now, you may not be able to imagine working for less than you're making right now. And going back to the issue of having savings, okay, if you can't, then you're probably living beyond your means, and I define living beyond your means as spending all your money every month, okay? Your means should be about 80% of what you actually make. And you could do it. Even an entry-level job, you could do it. You might have to eat ramen for a while, but it will pay dividends when you turn 40 and you have $1 million in the bank and you realize I have a lot more flexibility now. And frankly, at the beginning of your career, you don't have a lot of flexibility. So if the company offered you your dream job, would you take $500 a year, not $500,000, but $500 a year less, or even $5,000 less? Would you give up $4,000 for flexible working arrangements so you can pick your kids up from school every day, or for a job which had an on-site kindergarten or daycare? Okay. Would you take $20,000 less if you didn't have to travel every week? These are all completely legitimate things for you to decide about the life that you wish to live. And I just think too many people think, oh, I have to give a range and it's got to be a good range and it can't be less than what I'm making now and so on. Well, it depends on the job. And actually, this first range is dependent upon what they might first be thinking of you as. But if you deliver outstanding results in the interview, they might offer you something different. And now the original range you said is moot.
Yes.
They're going to be higher than your original range. Oh, would you turn that down because it's higher because you're in a better job? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, folks. We are not yet, if you're just having these initial teaser conversations, I'll call them, you're not at the point of the interview. You don't even know what the options are outside the base salary number. So you've got to, by definition, remain flexible, both in your own mind and when you're giving a number to the recruiter or the individual that you're speaking to. I mean, you don't know anything yet. So it would be something like, finish your sentence with, of course, I'm flexible on that, depending on the opportunity and the other benefits.
Yeah. This is the professional response. It's like someone saying, what's your location preference? Atlanta. I'll tell the story again. I've told the story before. I almost always get it backwards because I've heard from the guy that I told the story about, who's a member of our community. He was looking for a job in Cincinnati. Okay. He was offered a job, and I heard of this through my Procter & Gamble friends. He was offered a job with Procter & Gamble in Atlanta. That's where the offer was. He was also offered a job from Coke in Cincinnati. It's just a bizarre coincidence, right? If you don't know, folks, Coke is headquartered in Atlanta. All roads lead to Atlanta at Coca-Cola, and all roads lead to Cincinnati at Procter & Gamble. He wanted Atlanta so bad, he took the Procter & Gamble job, which kept him in Atlanta for 2 years. And then he was promoted to the headquarters, and now he's not going back to Atlanta ever again. And if he had been smart and said, I can live in Cincinnati for 2 years, knowing that all roads lead to Atlanta, it would have been a much better decision. So I'm not suggesting, well, first of all, I wouldn't recommend a specific city. There are exceptions depending upon family situations. If your spouse is in her second year of medical school, and she's in St. Louis, okay, you're probably restricted to St. Louis. That's fine, Okay. Those things are fine. But for the vast majority of us, it should be a region of the country when it comes to geographical preference. But even so, if I offered you a job in Atlanta and you had a preference for the Southeast United States, and then you discovered that they were looking at you for a job in Los Angeles at 75% more pay with a bigger remit, with a bigger opportunity, would you turn down the Los Angeles job? Well, you wouldn't be offered it if you didn't offer the caveat of saying, of course, I'm flexible on that, depending upon the opportunity and other benefits. So that caveat applies both to salary and to location.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, folks, the answer to all of the questions asked by recruiters are truly incredibly simple, but candidates still get them wrong every day of the week. And that's not because they lack ability. It's really because they overcomplicate what they're being asked. Instead of just responding to the question in front of them, candidates assume there has to be some sort of hidden agenda, or there's some sort of trick or a deeper meaning that they're supposed to uncover. They start second-guessing themselves, trying to get the perfect answer rather than the clear and honest answer. And in doing so, they often miss the point and annoy the recruiter.
Yes. And the two people who wrote this podcast years ago, and it's been updated, obviously, we've got stuff in there about AI, were me. I had been a recruiter for a couple of years, and Wendy Lord, who is the single smartest person about careers ever and had been a recruiter for IBM and Procter & Gamble in the UK. I'll tell you something else. Going back to the point I made about YouTube videos, which are probably telling you something different to be clever and to ultimately annoy the recruiter. Folks, those people are trying to make money off of you. They're not trying to help you. Okay? This podcast is free. We're in our 20th year of creating podcasts for free. Career Tools has been here for 18 of those years, I think. We started it in 2008 during the Great Recession because we realized one cast a month, which is what we were doing at the time about careers, was not enough. And so we started putting out guidance like this every week for 15, 16, 17 years. We just want to help you. We don't want your money. Certainly, you become a licensee. You could come to one of our conferences. That'd be great. Even if we never meet you, we refuse here to not tell you the honest truth that benefits you. It's old-fashioned. It's maybe not the best revenue model, but we care about what happens to you, even if we don't know you. Because if more people get the right job because they're educated about these kinds of questions, the world becomes a better place. Your world is a better place. The company's world is a better place. And other people around you is a better place. So the key here to success is to give direct, effective answers that match what's being evaluated. Don't overthink it. Don't get clever or coy. Once you stop imagining complexity that isn't there, it becomes much easier to see how to rectify your problem, improve your results and your prospects immediately.
That's absolutely it. Thank you so much for joining us, folks. And thank you, Mark, for recording with me.
My pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
All right, folks, we hope that this helped you. Now, help us help others and tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.